Live from the Hanania studio, this is Jaguars Monday.
Jaguars Monday.
Presented by Kangaroo Express. Jaguars Monday with Brian Sexton, Jaguars great Tony Baselli, and CBSSports.com senior writer Pete Prisco is sponsored by Baptist Health System and by Everbank. Jaguars Monday starts right now.
All right, welcome to Jaguars Monday, Labor Day. Hope you've enjoyed some time with your family and friends. We are buckled up and ready for opening day, which comes up this Sunday. Actually, opening night is Thursday when the Ravens and Broncos play in Denver, but opening day for the rest of the league next Sunday. We are live in the Hanania studios. By the way, tonight, all access, CBS 47, 7 o'clock. Jeff Loggeman, Brent Martineau kick it off with Luke Jokel. Second overall pick in the draft. Should be fun. Tune in 7 o'clock if you're in front of your TV. Brian, Tony, Pete is not with us this evening.
He is scared.
No,
he's not scared. The word was after I whipped him for the first 2 weeks, he needed a bye week.
Well, then he got whipped by Keith Olbermann.
I mean, between me and Keith Olbermann slapping him into position. I mean, my guess is Pete is curled up in the fetal position somewhere, sucking the thumb, hoping that
actually
he'll have a better run in a week or so.
Actually, he's not.
He's not?
I talked to him about an hour ago.
I thought he was scared. I thought he backed out.
Yeah. No, about an hour ago, I talked to him. He was in Philadelphia. He had been over at NFL Films shooting inside the NFL. He was headed to South Florida for CBS. And we'll be back with us next week, he promises. We had a couple of yucks about Olbermann, who I think is one of the biggest blowhards in the history of media. And he stood firm on his belief on his column, on the things that he says. So some insight from Pete on that if you haven't followed it.
And we're gonna talk Jaguars here at the beginning, but we're gonna get to Pete
just
later in the show.
The fact that Pete will be with
us. And you want to hear a good segment of Pete answering the critic of Keith Olbermann. We'll set that up. Keith Olbermann taking shots on Pete's article about the concussions.
Here are the big stories, though.
Everything else.
Here are the big stories today. Our big three, our top story, Blaine Gabbert through today. And the question is, will he be ready for Sunday in Kansas City? Number two, the Jaguars roster was already different than 2012. 26 new players.
Not as different as the team they're playing, though.
Okay, we'll talk about that. Yesterday, though, blew that away. Almost 50% turnover. And then finally, we will discuss the concussion settlement from last week. We'll get into it in a little more depth. I had a chance to catch up with Cecil Shorts in the locker room today. He had a thought on that. So all of that coming. But first, the big story, Blaine Gabbert threw the ball to net. Now, he didn't take snaps from center, and he didn't work in the team drills, but he did throw the ball. So your thoughts on what that means, knowing the injury, and whether or not he should be available on Sunday.
Well, first things first is the fact that he was able to grip the football today and throw it is a very good sign, because that is the most important thing. I mean, can he grip the ball? Can he make an accurate throw? Is he comfortable doing it? The next test is going to be twofold. One, how does he feel when he wakes up in the morning? Because anybody who's had an injury knows that, you know, when you're rehabbing it, the first time you go back and you test that injury and it feels good, that's a good sign. But you have to wake up the next morning and see how the body responds. Is there going to be inflammation or anything else to it? And second is taking snaps.
Right.
He's got to put his hands in there and take a snap.
Well, here he is. Earlier today, he spoke to the media after practice, and he was asked, how's it feel?
Very optimistic about it, and it's healing well. About as fast as it can at this point, but no, I feel great.
And for him, you know, when you look there and you stand, he didn't appear to, you know, be in any pain. Not that he would be right.
So let me
afterwards
ask you a question. What were you gauging that on? Was there some body scan you did?
Yeah, I was just looking at him. Just looking at him.
I mean, that's nothing personal.
But if you've broken a thumb, and I have, you know.
So what do you do? Tell me, was there like new body language if your thumb hurts?
Yeah, there is. For me, there is, because I'm not as strong as that. Anyway. But he was there talking about the thumb. He was asked, you know, what do you think about your ability to go out and play?
It's pain tolerance, having confidence in your throws, and knowing that you can get the ball to spots that you need to get the ball to. Because not everything's crisp and clean on the game. You got to make some good throws and put in some tight windows. So I'm just trying to progress to that level right now.
And I did ask him, does it hurt? He said, yeah. Yeah, there's a little pain.
Well, there's going to be pain.
Yeah, there's pain.
And so he said it exactly right. It's pain tolerance. And the pain tolerance is, you know, everyone goes, well, if he's tough enough, he can tolerate it.
Yeah.
He is a tough guy because he's going to tolerate pain, but the pain can get so much where it changes how you throw the ball, because as soon as you release it, as you're releasing it, you think about it or you hesitate. The body is an awesome creation, and it protects itself. I mean, you can only play through so much pain until where the natural response of your body protecting that injured joint or body part takes over and doesn't allow you to do the things you need to do. So he has to be able to do that. He has to be able to drop back with confidence and let it go. Yes, feel it, and yes, have pain, but not pain that changes the mechanics of what he's trying to do.
You know, he said he didn't think it was going to be a problem to be able to take the snap from center because he was asked that. He brushed that off because early in the day, Gus had talked about, you know, being able to take the snap from center, and they were going to wait till Wednesday. You know, that was part of the plan, and the whole thing has to be a process. He didn't seem to think that. In fact, he was pretty lighthearted about it. You know, he was asked about throwing today, and, well, here's his comment.
I let it rip today.
How far did you throw it?
I can throw it pretty far. 11 yards.
He backed off a little bit there at the end. But he was defiant almost. He was like, yeah, don't worry about it.
Well, the good news, it's Monday. And so tomorrow will be, my guess is, the scheduled traditional day off.
It's a day off.
And then Wednesday is the key day because that's really when you start your install on a normal week. So the hope is he comes, shows up to treatment tomorrow morning, goes through whatever the mechanics of the treatment are on that thumb, and he feels good and then wakes up Wednesday morning and is ready to go and can make all the throws, take the snap, and do everything. And I don't think, you know, typically the starter, let's say, takes 80 to 90% of the reps. You probably give him about 50 to 60% because you want Chad Henne to be ready. And then you amp that, or, you know, you move that up each day throughout the week to where you're confident that he's ready to play on Sunday afternoon.
Is it too aggressive for him to be ready to go opening day?
No, not at all.
Guy who's under the gun like he is this year?
I like it. I think he wants to play. I like it. And the coaches will be able to tell if he can make the throws and he can do it with confidence. He should play if he feels like he can. Now, the thing you worry about, and he talks about it not being clean back there and you have to adjust. Listen, there's still going to be guys running around, and you worry about him hitting that hand when he's throwing the ball or getting tackled or something else and setting him back even further. So that's something that Gus Bradley, Mike Ryan, the trainer, head trainer, and the doctors of the Jaguars are going to have to sit down and have a discussion about of really how healed it is, how's the small hairline fracture look, and what are not only can he play, but what are the risks moving forward with contact and getting that thing hit again.
You know, correct me if I'm wrong, there's really nothing you can do to pad that for him because it impacts his ability.
There's nothing
to control the ball.
He's just got to go. He's got to play. And now if he can't, then he shouldn't and get Henne in there because you only want Blaine if Blaine is near 100%. I don't think he has to be 100%, but he's near 100% because that guy gives us the best chance of winning on Sunday against the Chiefs. But if he's only 70, 75%, 80%, then you have to start weighing the option saying, listen, Blaine, we know you want to play and we want you out there, but in your current status of your health with his thumb, Chad probably gives us the best chance to win if you don't hit a certain threshold, whatever that is. So, listen, the next 3 days, Tuesday, treatment.
Right.
Critical. Wednesday, Thursday, practice. Critical in making the decision.
Do you think Wednesday's the decision point? Because
no.
If he goes out there and he can't, if he struggles with it at all.
Well, if he can't, yes,
yeah,
then
I mean,
it is.
Right. So if there's no
obvious
chance to come back Thursday and have a better practice and go,
no.
Oh, he can play.
No, but if he –
Wednesday will decide.
If Wednesday looks good – and he looks okay. Yeah, he's doing a good job. That's important. But he might do a good job Wednesday and show up Thursday and be in so much pain and swelling and everything else that you say Thursday, he just can't do it.
Right.
Now, if Wednesday shows up and he's struggling mightily and can't grip the ball and can't make the throws, well, then I think you make the decision right there. Let's give him another week.
All right, our phone number this evening, 355-NFL-1, 800-355-6351. Jaguars Monday, live from the Hannity Studio. We're here every single Monday. Normally, Pete Prisco from CBS Sportsline will join us. He is going to be on tape this evening for a brief segment. Tonight, Tony and I are here to get you ready for the week, and we've got plenty to come. In fact, a lot to come. We're going to talk about the Jaguars roster. It was a huge day yesterday. 7 new names here. Baselli was gloating over text messages yesterday.
Sometimes you get him right. Sometimes you get him right. Sometimes the smartest guy is the one who has the loudest mouth.
You know, we may have to call Lagerman and get him on this next segment. Let's do this. Let's take a break. We'll come back. You are listening to Jaguars Monday on News Talk WOKV, now on 104.5 FM and on AM 690. We call it Jaguars Radio, live from the Hannity Studio.
Welcome back to the Hanania Studio. Jaguars Monday continues right now.
We'll go long in the fuel-efficient Ford Escape. See your Southern Ford dealer today. They're a proud partner of the Jaguars. Ford, go further. Brian Sexton, Tony Baselli. And since Pete Prisco isn't here, Jeff Loggeman can join us and get a word in edgewise. Loggy, how are you? Oh, I guess I should push the button.
Oh, good work, Brian.
I thought Joe did that. I thought that was what he did. Well, you push a lot of buttons, just not physically. All right.
So now I can say what's happening, boys.
Now you can say, how are you?
We pushed the right button finally.
You know, I think Radio 101 is push the right button.
Yeah.
That goes a long way, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think that's a shot at me, and I think I probably deserve it. Hey, all access tonight.
Can you imagine
tonight?
How bad it would be, though, if Pacelli was in charge of pushing the buttons?
Yeah, that'd be a problem. I try to stay away from buttons.
I thought Joe was in charge of the buttons. That's all I'm saying. You got Luke Jokel on tonight. That should be a fun show.
Yeah, we do, and it's going to be fun taking him up to the smart board. We're going to look at him a little bit, and we're also going to look at some of the guys that made the roster, and actually one of the new guys, Jox McClendon. Probably don't even know this. But Brian, you remember when the rookie quarterback for the Atlanta Falcons landed on his shoulder, and I was talking about how he might have subluxed his shoulder when he landed on his elbow?
Yep. He went
to
injured reserve.
The ball was caught by Jox McClendon. The Jaguars guard.
That's right.
Off the waiver wire.
That's right.
Nice play. Run it, boy. Run it.
Yeah. So we're going to actually show that play on the smart board because Luke probably has absolutely no clue.
All right. We want to ask you before Tony gets to his "I was right" comment. We just want to ask you, which he was.
You know, in fairness, he was right. He was right on the money, actually.
Every once in a while, what is it, the old saying? A blind squirrel finds an acorn.
Every once in a while.
Or not, either one.
Hey, give us your thought on today, because when Blaine Gabbert hit the helmet of Quentin Coples in New York, I think it was Quentin Coples. Oh, no, it was Muhammad Wilkerson. When he hit the helmet, you immediately called that was what the injury was. You had seen it. You knew it. You've had that. So give us your sense on what today means. Throwing, no team drills, not taking snaps. What does it mean, and what do you expect from him Wednesday on the practice field? Again, you're not a doctor, but you know a lot about this injury.
Yeah, well, I think the biggest question is when can he have a full week of practice and have an effective week of practice? And to be honest with you, I don't see that happening this week. I mean, I just don't. I mean, he's a relatively young player. Who has been sitting on the sideline for a couple weeks now, and to be able to expect him to come back from an injury, you know, and pick up right where he left off, which, you know, was absolutely fantastic in New York, I think that would be shocking. You know, so my expectation is that, you know, there may be some issues this week and adjustment to actually the pain, and I would expect to see him week two or week three. Now, that's just me, you know, just guessing. And the reason I say that is, you know, we're talking about the quarterback here. It's not like we're talking about a wide receiver that can throw some tape on it and catch a ball and it's a little uncomfortable every now and again. But can you imagine having a fractured thumb and every time you get under Brad Meister's really sexy rear end, he's hammering your thumb every time with the ball? Now, I just can't imagine that being a comfortable feeling and being able to be an effective passer. But who knows? I might be wrong.
Well, I think the only part I disagree with you, Jeff, is I think it's too early to tell.
Don't tell me you disagree with Brad having a sexy butt.
No, I think it's very good looking. I think it's very attractive. I've noticed it on several occasions. But I do think it's too early to make an assessment of whether he'll get a full week of practice yet, because the full week of practice doesn't start until Wednesday. And so I think the key day is Wednesday. If he can come out Wednesday and go through 50-60% of the 11-on-11 and 7-on-7 drills and feel comfortable enough to make all the throws. Yes, he's going to be in pain. Yes, it's going to be sore. Can he take a snap? Can he do all that? Then I think the next stage in the timeline is you wait to see how he wakes up Thursday morning, how he feels, and can he take more reps on Thursday. Now, if he can't do those two things, I agree with Jeff 100%. He is not at the position at the point of his career as a player where a Tom Brady or a Peyton Manning, where you would say, hey, let's just take it easy till Friday, get him, you know, half the team rates reps Friday, and then we'll roll on Sunday. He is not that type of player yet. And so I agree with Jeff. He has to have a full week of practice, but I think it's too early to make a judgment whether he'll be able to do that.
But Tony, that's what we get paid to do.
I mean, I'm just saying.
We get paid to guess, and when we get paid to, you know, have a prediction, then I just don't see it happening. We're talking about a timeline here. We're expecting him. You know, they're saying that he's, you know, right in line with the process. But, you know, that's a really fast process to go from gripping a ball on one Sunday, then turn around the following Sunday and play NFL quarterback at a high level. That's a big jump.
I don't know, but just to be a contrarian, I'm going to say he will play.
Okay.
And, maybe give Jeff a chance to be right, because I was right last time and he was wrong.
You're such a benevolent.
So I'll take the other
okay,
side.
Okay, Logs, you're right this week.
Even though I have no real clue what is going to happen, because the one thing I agree with Logs on is if I broke a thumb, they tape it up and you go out there and every time you punch someone rushing the passer or you had to put your hand in there on a run game, it would hurt like you know what, but it's not going to affect the overall scheme of the game. I mean, I'm going to still go out there and play and just suck it up and get through it. Quarterback's completely different. You can't tape it up. You can't do a lot of things. That thumb's going to be bare. He has to be able to grip it. He's got to be able to throw it and to be able to take a snap. So we'll see.
Hey, you know, that will constitute tonight's Copy Facts face-off. Since we do not have Prisco, you guys could go head-to-head. But that means that we have to declare a winner.
Well, I don't think the winner can be declared. We'll be in the booth on Sunday. We will give we'll raise the arm of the winner of this Copy Facts face-off.
All right. Hey, Logs.
Vasily's already walking around carrying the belt over his head.
Oh, I mean, there's no doubt about it.
Gracious. Over the weekend, I get a text. I was right. There was 10 players, near the roster. I'm just going, are you kidding me?
Oh, you tried
it's
to come back.
It's Labor Day weekend, and I'm getting a text from Vasily just so he can tell me he's right?
I got Absolutely. The same text.
You got the same one. I text everybody.
I got the same text.
I mean, how bad is that?
I was going to do a press release, but I couldn't get the TU to run it.
Jeff, the last couple of years around here, we have seen about 30% turnover on the roster year to year as they have tried, Gene Smith tried first to kind of get this thing turned around. About 30%, and that's pretty standard around the league year to year. You'll see that kind of roster movement on the teams right at the bottom of the standings. This team, 50% turnover, 26 of 53 players.
And, Jeff, before you answer, the Kansas City Chiefs, I was reading as we start prepping for this game this week, they had 7 waiver claims as well.
Right.
They have 30 new faces going into Sunday.
More than 50%.
Yeah, more than the Jaguars. It's amazing.
But here's the crazy part, though. I mean, when was the first waiver acquisition? The day before the Atlanta game, right?
Yeah, that was when they brought in Kyle Knox.
Or 2 days before the Atlanta game, so basically in the last week, they've changed 18.9% of the roster. That's a pretty big number.
They get better.
It's going to be interesting to see how it plays out.
Did they get better doing it? Have you got a thought on that?
We're gonna find out.
I
think first and foremost, we're gonna find out if they get better on special teams because that's where the bulk of the results are going to show. As I was talking with J.P. Shadrick on Inside the Jaguars earlier today, if you look at special teams, that's the one area that you can expect immediate contribution from some of these guys. Because, Tony, playing special teams, can you count the 5? Now, offensive linemen, you have to count the 7.
Six.
That's under a typical Chip Kelly offense, but most offenses, you got to count 7. Well, special teams, all you got to do is count the 5, right? You're blocking a guy or you're covering down the field, you don't have to worry about counting there. But when you're blocking on punt protection or on kickoff return, you got to be able to count to 5, and that's it.
Jeff, let me ask you a question. The one, and we're going to get into this more, Brian and I, as we move on. Antoine Blake, I was surprised. That was the one guy, because I thought he was their best special teams player. I was a little bit surprised to see him on the waiver wire.
Tony, I agree. I was a little bit surprised, but after watching the last 2 preseason games, the one thing that separated Antoine Blake last year in making this roster, he was an absolute lights-out gunner on punt team. And if you go and you look at his performance on special teams in the last 3 weeks, did he really stand out and make plays on special teams? I didn't see it. They said, hey, look, we knew that he did it last year. And I was told that, hey, look, we know that he did it last year, but he's got to show it to us again, and that's the way it is, especially on special teams. You got to prove it again, year in and year out, unless you're like a Montel Owens type.
Especially if you have no value on the defense, and he was not in the plans in the secondary, and we saw him struggle a little bit in extended time in the 4th preseason game coming up from the safety position. So I think you're right. If you can't show it on special teams, and that's all you're going to do, you better do it week in and week out, otherwise they'll find somebody else.
And just a side note to that, the one guy that really showed well as a gunner on punting? Jordan Todman.
He had a great preseason. He might be the preseason MVP.
He'd be a candidate.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see what his role is because it appears that Justin Forsett could be ready. He hasn't practiced since early.
If Justin's ready, then Jordan's going to have a role on special teams. He's going to have to be a big contributor there.
He's
a viable kickoff return guy as well.
Bradley talked about it today, you know, said that they had a role for him in mind. Someone even said, can Todman fill that role? And the answer was, you know, Justin Forsett has a skill set that we like. We'll see if he can come back, like you've been talking about, and practice on Wednesday, you know, based on how the toe is. So we shall see. Logs, thanks so much.
Have a good TV show. Have a good TV show.
I got to go get Vicky to put a lot of makeup on my face so that I can look good.
That's hard work.
Luke Jokel, thanks. Jeff Loggeman picking up the slack tonight. Jeff has Luke Jokel with he and Brent Martineau coming up at the top of the hour on our television partner CBS 47. We will step aside for news. Our program this evening brought to you by Presentation Resource Incorporated. More, 90 more minutes, including some of Pete Prisco when we return to Jaguars Thursday here on Jaguars Radio.
.145, I was on a plane by 5. Okay. That's a turnaround. They told me, yeah, we'll get you a flight tonight. I'm thinking I'll have an 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock flight. Check my email. Flight's at 5. So, hurried up, packed my stuff up, you know, got to Jacksonville as soon as possible.
That's tight end Clay Harbor, formerly of the Philadelphia Eagles, said that he heard about 1 o'clock that he was going to Jacksonville, and by 5 o'clock he was on an airplane. I tell you, all of the new guys practiced today. And
they need to.
Well, okay. But, I mean, talk about a logistical challenge to get 7 guys, you know, some from Minnesota, Seattle, Philadelphia, a couple of guys, a guy from Chicago. They got them all here, and they all were practicing today on the field. Big-time adjustment for a lot of these guys to get the opportunity to get on and play. We mentioned earlier, Jaguars claimed 7 guys yesterday. Kansas City did as well, so it's not unprecedented now. But David Caldwell yesterday did a conference call with members of the media and talked about, you know, what their mindset was making such dramatic change to the roster right before the start of the regular season.
The mindset we had going into this was really knowing that we could take advantage of this number 2 waiver spot in the hopes that we're not here in the future. And 2, that we could really put a premium on speed and athleticism to really help our special teams and give us some depth with players that we can develop in the future. You know, a lot of these players that we claim, they're young players that have a specific trait that we feel like with our coaching staff that they can develop.
You know, one of the reasons, Tony, and you know I talked about over the last couple of weeks how many moves we thought we'd see, and one of the reasons why I thought we might see more than average was because they were sitting number 2 and they could have almost anybody they wanted.
Yeah, and I think David Caldwell said a couple things. He mentioned that, you know, hopefully we're not in this position, but since we are, let's take advantage of it. And to add more speed, you look at let's look at the 2 tight ends that they added. DJ Williams from Green Bay, 6'2", 245. Clay Harbor from Philly, 6'3", 252. More, especially DJ, more of a move tight end. Guys who can run, guys who can help you at special team. They have Reisner, they have Mercedes Lewis, are going to be your 1 and 2 guys. But I can see one of these guys becoming that move tight end, which we have not had here for a long, long time. And so it's interesting how they added it. Another thing he said that I think is that I like, he said we wanted to bring in players that could fit what our coaching staff is trying to do. They fit well with us. We've talked about it before. Jeff has mentioned it several times of how that Gus and Dave work very closely together, and Gus is building this team not just out of thin air or guys he likes. Obviously he likes them. But he's keeping in mind how Gus wants to coach, what the scheme is, what they need, players that fit their system, and not just bringing in anybody, but listen, let's find guys that, you know, whether it's a Leo, let's find a guy who can rush the passer. They didn't find that guy here. Or a move tight end to help Jed Fish. Whatever it is, we want speed. We're going to get guys who can run. They bring in Burton, the wide receiver from Minnesota. Big, fast guy, something we didn't have on the roster. They want to add those guys, keeping in mind what the coaching staff is trying to do.
Well, here's a little insight then into how David Caldwell works and where his influencers are strongest. Because in talking to people from Indianapolis, they said the reason why Bill Polian was as successful as he was because he and Tony Dungy worked together like that. They knew And the best example is Bob Sanders, right? Bob Sanders was 5 foot nothing, 5 foot eight, a safety, and you thought, how in the world could he play? Now, he had some health injury, you know, injury issues that kept him down, but when he was on the field, he was a dominant player. And that was what Tony Dungy wanted, and so that's what Bill Polian went and got. And the word out of Indy, and anyone that worked with the Polians, was they and the coaching staff were on the same page.
So let's go back to that. Let's talk about that situation. That's a great example. Look at how Indianapolis built that team. They had Peyton Manning. We're going to build around Peyton. We're going to give him weapons. We're going to run a high-tempo, high-scoring offense, and we're going to play with the lead. So we're going to build a defense how Tony Dungy wants to run. One gap, cover two type of defense where we rush the passer, we get after people because they weren't big inside.
Nope.
If they were in games where a team could run the ball and keep Peyton off the field, they struggled. That's how we had success against
them. You bet.
But when Peyton got the lead and they could let loose those pass rushers, Dwight Freeney comes to mind before anybody, they were very tough to beat. And that's how Bill built that team based on what Tony, his philosophy, what they wanted to do in Indianapolis.
So there's some insight into how David is working with Gus. The other part of it was the 46-man roster. And see, so many times people focus on the 53, the 53, 53, but folks, you only get 46 active on game day, and Caldwell gave a little perspective on how they were looking at the 46-man roster during the news conference yesterday.
A lot of it, when we looked at who we were going to release, who we were going to cut, had to do with the 46-man roster and who were the potential guys that were going to be active for us this coming up week.
You know, and so specifically he was talking about Kyle Love and how they have had seven guys they felt could, you know, be interior defensive linemen, and he was a guy who didn't help on special teams, and so they didn't think he was even going to be active on game day.
Not only that, Kyle Love was a one technique. He was a nose guard. That's all he was going to be. You keep Diedrich, who can play the nose, he can play the three, he can go play that big end if he has to, and I think the guy that probably pushed Kyle Love out was Avery Jones. Undrafted.
You're exactly right.
Rookie free agent out of Georgia.
Gus said that today.
Versatile, can play a three technique, can play the big end, and can play the nodes if you need him to. When you only can do one thing, you better be the starter, and you better be dang good.
But touch on that 46-man roster, because when coaches look at their team, they're looking at who they can have active on Sunday.
Well, here's a perfect example. Offensive line, you're only going to have seven guys active. And so you have to have your starting five, you have to have a swing guy inside. That's why Mike Brewster makes the team, because he can play both guards and center. And then you need a tackle, whether it's Pazdor or Cameron Bradfield in this case, that can play either side, or in Pazdor's case, he can play right, and you have the luxury of your starting right tackle, Luke Joku, who can play left as well. And so it's all about setting up game day. Same with the defensive line. You're only going to have, you know, seven, maybe eight active, probably only seven, so you got to have your third defensive end, you have to have your third inside guy, and you want versatility when it comes to that.
And also special teams, because if you're a backup tight end, a backup wide receiver, a backup linebacker, a backup running back, the only way you're going to be on the field or even active is if you can contribute on special teams.
Well, and that's why you go heavier in those positions. Most of the time, your defensive line, maybe your ends, but a lot of times your defensive line, your offensive line are very limited on special teams outside of kick return. They're going to be your back in the wedge.
Right.
But on punt, kickoff return, punt return, you need tight ends, you need linebackers, you need defense backs and receivers who will hit somebody that can play those teams with speed. And that was critical when you make up a 46-man roster.
All right, so a lot of turnover yesterday. You know, not only did they sign seven, but they had to release a bunch of players to make room for them. So lots of roster moves. And it won't be the end. It might not ever be that number again. But Caldwell touched on the fact that he and Gus are working to develop this team.
There could be anywhere from 30 to 50 players that get claimed, so that means 30 to 50 players have to get cut tomorrow. And we'll evaluate that pool, and then from that pool we'll look to see if we can upgrade somewhere. And it's a central theme of our – I know Coach Bradley and his staff talk about competition and always competing to get better. Well, it's no different with our personnel staff here, and we will always look for an edge or an advantage of where we can try to get better.
So I didn't see any roster moves today, but that doesn't mean that every day that they aren't looking at that wire. In fact, they are looking at that wire, and they will be very active where they feel the need.
If you're not in the top 22, excuse me, if you're not in the top 22 of this team, don't get comfortable.
Okay.
It could be a revolving door. They're going to look to get better constantly. And there's different times of the year where guys get released. Now, it's never going to be this heavy right now. guys, you know, you move down the road, guys come back from injuries or suspensions and everything else. Those guys get brought back from suspensions. When Justin Blackmon comes back, somebody's getting released.
Right.
Other teams have the same issues. So all of a sudden, you're going to see more players out there.
There's another pool of players that might be available for this team to find a way to improve their roster. Hey, we don't have an injury report today because, well, the coach doesn't have to give us one until Wednesday. The team didn't practice over the weekend. We'll tell you this. We talked about Blaine Gabbert's thumb, and everyone said he is on track to practice on Wednesday. Justin Forsett practiced today. The only other players that didn't practice today were Jeremy Mincy and Will Rackley, and both are expected to practice, even if on a limited basis, on Wednesday when the Jaguars return. That's this week's Injury Report presented by Baptist Health System, changing healthcare for good. Brian Sexton, Tony Boselli, Joe Fortunato. We will hear from Pete Prisco. He's got some thoughts on Keith Olbermann, some thoughts on the roster machinations from a day ago, some thoughts on Blaine Gabbert. That comes right after the top of the hour. But until then, Tony and I are here to talk to you, 355-NFL1, 800-355-6351. This is Jaguars Monday on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the Hanania Studio. Jaguars Monday continues right now.
All right, about 9 more minutes in the first hour of Jaguars Monday. Brian Sexton along with Tony Boselli and Joe Fortunato. Prisco is in South Florida. Will not be with us live.
Scared.
Will be on tape after the top of the hour. Let's talk a little bit about this roster now, based on the moves that they have made and places that they have shored up. And specifically, let's go to the receivers and the tight ends. Because they grabbed two tight ends and a receiver. And you talked a little bit about Clay Harbor and about DJ Williams. They went out and grabbed the kid. And I got to look up his name, to be quite honest with you. All these guys. Stephen Burton. Right, so now you've got that, what, fourth, fifth receiver. And Gus was talking about him earlier today. Big guy, guy who runs. They haven't had a receiver like him on this this roster. Just your thoughts on the receiving core without Justin Blackmon to start the season.
Extremely raw and young. I mean, you're going to roll out there with Ace Sanders. Obviously, you have Cecil. That's a plus.
Right.
You know, we expect him to build on what he did last year. He had an outstanding training camp. He's looked great in OTAs. I mean, all the confidence in the world in him. After that, you got Ace Sanders, rookie.
Mike Brown.
Not sure. I mean, how's he going to – I mean, you don't know.
No.
Mike Brown is your slot.
Played
had
one
a great camp.
Yeah, one game last year.
He was a quarterback 2 years ago. And then you bring in Burton. I mean, there's not – I mean, so those are your four active receivers on game day. How much work is Burton even going to – how much of the offense is he going to know? My guess is he's going to be mainly a special teams player.
Exactly.
And so you're pretty, I mean, thin and raw.
Which means that you're going to rely on the tight ends more.
Well, and you got, listen, Reisner had a nice camp. So he could catch the ball, athletic, did some nice things. Obviously, get Mercedes Lewis back, which is a plus. He had a good camp as well. But let me tell you, the theme of this roster is thin. And it got thinner in some respects after signing, because just
guys don't know you.
You don't know how much of the playbook are they going to know? I mean, so it's like drinking out of a fire hydrant. They're going to be trying to take as much information as possible. So, you know, if Blaine's healthy, you got Mojo back there. The offensive line is going to be much better this year. Obviously, we like Luke has had a good preseason. Eugene had a very good week 3 preseason game. You know, you got Brad, you got Mercedes. You got Cecil out there, but it gets thin quick.
How comfortable are they with the offensive line group if they only signed one guy, McClendon, who was in Atlanta last year?
Who else was out there?
Well, I don't know, and that's a valid question. I just thought that might be an area they might try to address.
Typically, NFL teams don't let go of big athletic players. Hard to come by. This league is thin on offensive linemen with all 32 teams. Guys who can play usually don't get released.
All right. Well, that makes sense. So what do you think now that they've got – you know what the starting five are. Bradfield did not have a good camp. You know,
I would make Pazdor my seventh offensive
swing tackle?
I would. I think Pazdor had a better training camp, better preseason game.
How much of that is the fact that you've got Jogo who can play left and Pazdor?
Because
Pazdor doesn't look like he can play.
No, Pazdor is a right tackle, right guard.
Okay.
That's what he is.
Here's the guy that I worry about, Mike Brewster.
Well,
because if he's got to start at left guard,
probably gonna worry all year then because he's here.
Well, okay, and the reason why is we saw him at left guard in seven starts last year. He just didn't have any power,
and he struggled in the preseason with that.
Yeah.
Now he's an athletic guy. He's smart. He understands what they're asking him to do. I think you feel better with him at center if he had to play.
Do you?
I'd rather have Brad out there. Don't get me wrong,
but right. I mean, but if he had to play, you'd want him at center.
I think so because a lot of times it's. Not a lot of teams are going to have a head-up nose all the time. You're sliding. You can help them out a little bit more there. You know, guard, for half the snaps in the pass game, he's going to be one-on-one, and he's got to hold up. And he struggled with power. He got bull rush. He got bull rush
in
week
Atlanta,
four.
Yeah.
Remember week four, preseason game, he got bull.
Yeah.
And that's his Achilles heel right now. He's going to have to work on that.
Well, and we'll see whether Will Rackley can go against Kansas City. On Sunday. Again, they expect him with the ankle that he injured against the Eagles to be ready to practice even on a limited fashion on Wednesday. Well, that's the offensive side of the ball. Again, they got a little deeper at a couple of spots in terms of bodies that they like for special teams, but we don't know what a lot of these guys are capable of doing. On the defensive side?
Where's the pass rush?
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm asking you.
I'm looking. I'm looking right now. And
did
I
you
can't
see anything from Kyle Knox?
No.
The other day?
He has speed.
Yeah.
I'm not going to judge him off of one game, getting off the plane and going out there and playing. I think they kept him because of special teams, because he can fly, he has a good size.
But we heard on the field before the game, this is a guy who's got some pass rush ability.
I didn't see it.
Okay.
I didn't see it. But listen, again, I'm not going to judge him. It was one game. I don't think he's going to get many pass rushes, probably. I mean, I think you're going to go with Babin, and then Branch will be your guy who will come in after that.
By the way, one of the linebackers that they signed yesterday, the kid from Philly, Chris McCoy, played a couple years with Calgary in the CFL. They have moved him to that Leo spot.
Yeah, I think, listen, it's either, the question you have is on third down, you're going to have Babin at one, you're going to have Sendarek Marks and Jeremy Mincy inside. I like Marks and Mincy rushing the three technique over a defensive tackle. Those guys can get after. They get up the field. They have some speed. Sendarek Marks has suddenness. He gave them some of the guys fits during the preseason. Who's going to be your other end? Is it going to be Branch, who we did not see much of in the preseason? If it's not Branch, then maybe it is Knox or the
McCoy kid.
McCoy.
You mean behind Babbitt?
Yeah. But on third down, you have to have two guys rush the end. Where's the other pass rush going to come from? Who's going to be that guy? Right now, it's Branch. I mean, I think your starting nickel is going to be Branch and Babbitt and then Marks and Mincy, but we didn't see a lot of out of Branch in the preseason.
And they grabbed another kid, JT Thomas, by the way, at linebacker, just kind of filling in holes. So you look at the linebacking core, you've got four guys who were here and two guys who were not, Thomas and Knox, that came in late. And then in the defensive secondary, they bring in, and as we talked a little bit about, Blake gone for Winston Guy and Will Blackman. And Blackman probably pushed Shipley off the roster, don't you think?
Yeah, because he's a punt returner. You have all the confidence in the world the way he fields punts. He has a little bit of juice back there. He can come in. He can be your, fifth, sixth, seventh, some defensive back down the line. I don't expect him to play a lot. I expect Mike Harris to be the nickel. But he can play that nickel position if Mike struggles. But he's primarily, I think, your punt returner and special teams player.
Yeah, and obviously this is a football team that didn't play well on special teams in the preseason. They had some moments where they were okay. They were okay in the Jets game early on, but then again, they gave up a couple of things. So
very inconsistent throughout the preseason of coverage.
All right. Again, so how is Mike McCoy, not Mike McCoy, Mike Malloy, going to be able to integrate all of these new guys in a short period of time?
Well, Coach Mallory has – no, he has some challenges as special teams coordinator.
Right.
Because he's got seven new faces in. Really eight because Knox is brand new as well. That he's going to have to spend all week how their coverage schemes work, how their return game works, and have the confidence when we kick off at 1 p.m. on Sunday that those are the guys we're going to go roll with.
Well, Gus said that Mallory was in the film room late last night.
Oh, he's got
watching
be.
The tape to see what these guys do. And then got to get him in a meeting, and I think there was a meeting scheduled this afternoon for all of them to be able to
Mike Mallory has probably the hardest job of anyone on the staff right now because all the guys, most of those guys we claimed, are not going to play on offense and defense. They might have to because of injuries or be plugged in, but they're going to be your major contributors on special teams.
And I'm guessing that that's what the the scouting department, the personnel department keyed in on, that these guys had the ability to do that, and not only the ability to play it, to run and do it, but the ability mentally to fit in and do it.
My guess is Gus, as he told the guys, says, we got to get better on teams. Let's go find some guys who can run and cover.
Yep, and that's what they apparently did yesterday. It was certainly the focus of both Gus Bradley's news conference earlier today and the conference call with the media that David Caldwell held yesterday. So there's hour one, Jaguars Monday, in the books. When we come back, we'll go around the National Football League, and we will have a conversation with Pete Prisco, and we'll hear from him and his thoughts on his spat with Keith Olbermann. That and more after news. You're listening to Jaguars Monday on Jaguars Radio.
Live from the Hanania studio, this is Jaguars Monday.
Jaguars Monday.
Presented by Kangaroo Express. Jaguars Monday with Brian Sexton, Jaguars great Tony Boselli, and CBSSports.com senior writer Pete Prisco is sponsored by Baptist Health System and by Everbank. Jaguars Monday starts right now.
All right, here we go. Hour number two. Brian Sexton, Tony Boselli, Joe Fortunato, Pete Prisco will be with us via tape at about 7:15, and we'll get his thoughts on his very public spat with Keith Olbermann. Olbermann made some very unflattering comments about his column from the concussion lawsuit. Well, concussion settlement is what it is right now. And we'll get some thoughts from Tony on that as well.
And Olbermann's one of your favorites. I know you.
Oh, stop. I know. I can't stomach the
guy. You are a nightly watcher of MSNBC.
God. Really?
And you were sad when he got off the air.
Yeah, MSNBC. I really like comedy news. And that's exactly what that was. So, no, I don't miss him at all. I thought he was really good on ESPN.
He's talented.
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt. But he's a blowhard, and he went after Prisco. So Pete has some thoughts, and you can imagine that he became a wallflower. So how about a couple of thoughts real quick around the National Football League? Mike Shanahan today says RG3 will start Monday.
Was there any doubt? I mean, did anyone doubt that RG3 wasn't going to start?
The only part about it that was is when the doctor comes out and says, I think they should use him differently. Remember the comments last week?
I appreciate that, but Dr. Andrews, you're one of the best surgeons in the entire
terrific
world.
Terrific surgeon.
Just stick to the operating table.
Well, but
let's leave the football to the football
out,
guys.
I know, but when he comes out and says it, it makes you think, well, what does he know?
I love Dr. Andrews. He did my knee. He's great. He's an outstanding doctor. But let's worry about the X's and O's of Mike Shanahan. He's won two Super Bowls. He knows what he's doing. They got a team into the playoffs last year. I think RG3 was, you know, outside some sort of setback. He was going to be the starter. He wants to play.
All
from
right.
What you've seen, he looks good. He needs to. I agree with Dr. Andrews. He does need to change the way he plays.
How?
He needs
How
to slide.
And let me set this up real quick. You did his first game last year against New Orleans,
awesome.
And we had the conversation.
He's unbelievable.
Right after that. So can he still be that guy?
Yes. Just slide. Just get down. Don't get the extra 2 yards when you don't have to. That's all it is. He is a fabulous player. Throws the ball. He's accurate. Big arm. He is so good for this league. He's so fun to watch. Plus, just please slide. I want to watch you for the next 10 years. He's got to slide, and you
still
can.
Still think he gets outside the pocket and runs?
Yes, he should. That's what he's dynamic. Just slide.
You
see, Colin Kaepernick took very few huge hits. He took a couple, but he slid. Russell Wilson, watch him play. Barely ever took big hits because he slid. You can run around. Just slide. That's
how hard is it going to be for Shanahan to convince him to do that?
I hope he convinced himself. Just look down at the knee brace you're wearing.
You would think. Shanahan wouldn't say anything about Dr. Andrews' concerns. Surgery January 9th and ready to go.
You know, I
know you. That's why I'm saying it, because you did it.
Myself, like RG3, an elite athlete. After I pulled my hamstring today running with the problem.
Like I said, one time.
Holy cow. I had surgery the second week of January, so let's say January 15th, and started all 16 games and started opening day. Now, listen, in all candid, I played left tackle.
Right.
You know,
you weren't a mobile guy.
I was very mobile.
Well, but
I had to block the defensive end.
Yeah. But you were mobile in a space. You weren't out running around darting and –
And I think it would be easy – if he was just a traditional quarterback, then I think you wouldn't even hesitate to think about this. But the fact that he is a runner, and I believe I read a report or heard a report, he says he could go out and run a 4.4 right now, or 4.3, whatever he runs. He feels good. But listen, the medical, the science of medicine is getting better and better each year, and the surgeons are so good, and our and Dr. Andrews is one of the best, and not just the surgery, but the rehab process, and how they've broken down the rehab of the ACL. Remember, that was a year-plus injury.
Oh, easy.
Where you might never be
when
the same.
When you first came in the league, it was.
Where you might never be the same.
Right.
And what they're able to do now, these guys get back quicker, faster, and they're just as strong. They're just the same player. It's remarkable. And I expect RG3 to have a great year.
Now, I mean, because he is so much fun to watch and so good for the league, I think that's where the concern comes in from a lot of people on
he's
the outside.
I say it all the time. If he's ready to play, you play. You get played. You get paid to play football. You don't get paid to watch. You don't get paid to rehab. You get paid to play football. I've never been one to say, well, let's just be safe and wait a little bit longer. Well, is he 100%? Is he cleared? Yeah. Then he plays. That's what you do.
Well, you're never going to be 100%. Not in this game, right?
Well, the first play you step out there, you're
100%. Right. Yeah.
The next play, you're...
Yeah, the first play of your rookie season.
You start slowly working down from 99 down to... But here's the thing with that whole 100%. You're 100% of what you are. Not 100% what you were last
year. That's a
good
way to put it.
Not 100% what you were when you were a rookie. Not 100% when you were, you know, 25. You're 100% of whatever your age is, whatever status you are, whatever year you are in the league. You're 100% then.
Another guy who is supposedly coming back, and this is day-to-day, which is interesting, Gronkowski, Rob Gronkowski, the tight end for
– He scares me.
For Bill Belichick and for the New England Patriots and Tom Brady.
If I was a Patriots fan, I'd be very worried. The back, it was an issue coming out of college.
Right.
It flared up. He had to have surgery. He had the broken arm, got staph in it, broke it again. He has a lot of wear and a lot of injuries. He's a fabulous player.
But the
reason he did not get drafted higher, it was because of injury concerns. Now they're showing their ugly head.
All right, this seems to me like a move to get Tom Brady someone, because he's playing without most of his receivers from a year ago. They've got two nice backs, and they've got a pretty good offensive line, but this seems to me like maybe they are hurrying him along because that offense was explosive with him in it last year and not so explosive without him.
You never know if they're hurrying him. I mean, listen, they want him back as soon as possible.
Yeah, I'm not making the insinuation that they're trying to get him to play when he's not
ready.
I guess
he's probably trying to hurry back.
Yeah, sure.
That's the nature of what you do.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, if you have pride and you love the game and you want to play and it's your profession, you push the envelope. That's what you do. I mean, that's what the team wants you to do. I mean, listen, you get paid to win football games. You get paid to perform. And you want to get out there as soon as you can. Now, you don't want to – that's why doctors and trainers have to hold players back sometimes, because we're not always the smartest cats. We kind of don't think long term. And so that's the job of the doctors and the trainers and ultimately the coach to make that final decision. But my guess is they all want to get him out there.
Do you suppose that if he isn't ready to go, that Tom Brady can still be Tom Brady and do what he's done, which is to take guys? Because remember, when they won the Super Bowls, I mean, they didn't have star players at wide receiver. I mean, Randy Moss came in, and you know, that one season.
Brian, there's this place in Canton, Ohio.
Oh, I know he's that great.
They're already carving the bust.
Well, yeah, he caught that after the third Super Bowl.
But he looked pretty good last year as well.
Well, that's what I'm saying. But last year.
I don't think he's going anywhere.
Okay.
Well, I think he'll be just fine.
I'm wondering if the Patriots.
No, I think they want Gronk out there because he gives them the best chance to win. But they're pretty confident that Tom Brady probably could get me and you and Logs out there running around and find a way to get the ball to us.
I'm not denying that the guy he's great. Absolutely great. And with two big running backs, you know, maybe they have to lean on that a little bit. But I just see the Gronkowski thing day to day. You know, they cut Tebow, obviously.
Do you believe anything that comes out of the Patriot camp as well?
No, not really. Probably not. Hey, Brady Quinn, by the way, got another shot in the NFL. Did you see that?
Congratulations.
Yeah.
He went to the Jets.
Well, and that just leaves that whole thing.
Where all quarterbacks go to die.
That whole thing is just an absolute mess.
I mean,
who's going to start on Sunday?
My guess is Geno Smith. Because I don't think Sanchez will be ready. He's doubtful. He got the shoulder. I think, and it was a throwing arm, too, as well. So,
yeah.
My guess is Sanchez won't be ready. My guess is Geno Smith will be out there. They brought Quinn in because they needed an emergency backup.
Not a whole lot else on the NFL wire here. It was a pretty quiet day as people got through. Yesterday was absolutely insane as teams were claiming players left and right. 35, I think, players were signed yesterday. Really not mess else.
Well, the good news is –
other than Stevie Johnson.
You know the best news is, and I don't care to talk about a receiver talking because they all talk. But Stevie Johnson, the best part is he was running smack, and he included a player I believe I read that's not even on the Patriots roster any longer.
Yeah.
If you're going to run smack, at least know who's on the team.
Yeah.
I mean, you're running smack about a guy who's—
Patrick Chung's in Philadelphia.
I mean, is doing something else somewhere else, and now, so I don't even pay attention to those guys. But the good news is this. All this nonsense of cuts and transactions and preseason games and is put to bed in about 72 hours because we kick off the NFL season Thursday night, Baltimore, Denver. First time in a long time, but the winning Super Bowl team isn't hosting.
Right.
They're going to Denver. Great rematch of the playoff game that I can't remember what safety was for the Broncos. It is still waking up in the middle of the night for taking the wrong angle on Jacoby Jones.
Yeah.
And I can't wait. I can't wait to see Peyton Manning. Can't wait to see Joe Flacco. I am Thursday night. I can't wait.
They really have captured the drama of this thing now on Thursday.
Oh, it's great. You got all these, you know, stars singing, concerts, all this crazy stuff. I will be doing the show from 7 to 8 with Mr. Brunell, Mr. Right. Loggeman, and I will be trying not to break every law as far as driving, speeding, to get back to Ponte Vedra to sit down right on my couch and turn on the TV and watch every
and
last
the ratings
snap.
Will be through the roof, without a doubt. Let's go ahead and do this. We'll take a break. When we come back, Pete Prisco joins us from an earlier conversation. And I want to talk to you about Geno Atkins and the big deal he got later in the program as well. Brian Sexton, Tony Boselli, Joe Fortunato, Jaguars Monday here on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the Hanania Studio. Jaguars Monday continues right now.
Welcome back, Jaguars Monday. Absent Pete Prisco this evening. He is en route to Fort Lauderdale. We're CBS Sports Line right now. He's taking some time from his travel schedule and is sitting in the airport in Philadelphia. Are all of Joe's relatives giving you grief?
Well, I mean, if they're not, they're the only people who aren't this week. That's for sure.
Unbelievable. Let's, you know, we won't even go to the power rankings. That seems minor this week. You wrote a column last week after the concussion settlement issue was made public on Thursday, and it was consistent with what you have always said. For that, Keith Olbermann, who's one of the biggest blowhards in the history of media, went postal on you on his show. Has that in any way, shape, or form cracked your foundation, or are you still standing on what you wrote?
I'm absolutely still standing on what I wrote. I mean, think about it. He did typical Olbermann fashion. He never disputed anything that I wrote. He just put up a montage of guys who had all kinds of problems off the field after football and their moms crying and everything else. Never once did he dispute what I wrote. And then, of course, he said I needed some to get a CT, a brain scan myself to get checked for CTE because of the way I acted. So, look, typical Keith Olbermann, doesn't bother me. His legion of followers got after me on Twitter, but I'm okay with it.
Well, you know, typical of the networks with which he's been associated other than the sports network, ESPN. I mean, he didn't really substantiate anything. He just took sound bites and took them out of context and placed them there and didn't say that Mike Webster died of heart troubles. You know, I mean, there was all kinds of that.
Yeah, alleged steroid use and everything else. You know, the other thing too, Brian, is, and I tweeted this back to him the other day, I said, If Keith Olbermann is now the police of the media, he's the guy who's in charge of policing the media,
You
would think that maybe he would come off and maybe say something about his own network backing out of the Frontline documentary.
Yeah, you might. That might be interesting. However, that, again, is not consistent with the way that he plays the game. Let me ask you this. There was a story that Peter King wrote about Kevin Turner. It's an emotional story about ALS and heart-wrenching and all of that. So justify for the people who are listening here again your position on these players and the medical difficulties that they face later in life.
Yeah, and I'm a big believer. Look, if the league is going to help out a Kevin Turner or somebody with some of those symptoms, then I'm okay with it. I'm not this big ogre that doesn't want guys to get help. I'm glad they're getting help. What I said was that I don't think they deserve to get help from the NFL in that where do they know where the problems came from? Did they come from grade school? You know, let's be honest about it. The majority of guys will have played more football outside of the NFL than inside the NFL. I mean, say a guy has 4 or 5 year career. Well, he played grade school, he played high school, he played college. So most of the stuff comes before they even get into that level. And then how do you know where the hits come from? And so I think that there's that at fault. Then there's the other thing is about, well, if a guy has a concussion, how do you know isn't he at fault if he doesn't admit to it and tell people about it? So I think there's two issues there, and I think the legal part of it would have kind of played out, and they might not have gotten anything. So I'm glad the guys are getting their money, the guys that really, really need it. I really am. But as far as you know, I think there's a money grab here in a lot of ways, and also if you really want to nail the NFL for being at fault here, yeah, you can try to, but I don't think you're really doing it like what's out there now. Now, is there a smoking gun, Brian? Who knows? Now, there might be. We don't know. They don't know. Nobody knows.
Well, but you have to think that if there was, that it would have been laid on the table long ago.
And
I mean,
if
it
there
would have
was,
been sitting there.
It would have never got to settlement situation.
Right, exactly. And then they wouldn't be so eager to get it done and behind them. So, again, do we know? No, we don't. Obviously, though, there's a lack of tolerance for people with completely different opinions than Keith Olbermann in this situation. And on these airwaves, we'll take all opinions all the time. So let's move on from that. Let's talk about Blaine Gabbert. That's the big story here in Jacksonville. Said in the locker room today that he's on schedule, that he can handle the pain, that he anticipates being able to, you know, take the snap from center, which is about the only thing he didn't do today. Threw the ball all over the field. What your thoughts on the injury he suffered and you know, whether he'll be functional available or should be functional available for this team on Sunday based on the pressure that he faces this year?
Well, and knowing him, having and discussing some of the things that he's gone through the past couple of years in terms of injuries, stuff that he won't even ever complain about or ever even mention, I say he plays on Sunday. And look, it's an injury where you have to be able to grab the football. If you can't grab the football, you can't throw the football. But if he can throw the football, you know, he'll be fine enough to go in there and take snaps on Sunday when it really matters. The bottom line is if he can grip it and throw it, I think he's going to play, and I think he will play.
You know, you saw a little bit of this offense. You didn't get to see him live and in person, but I know you saw some of him against the Jets. You know, based on what you know of Shorts and Blackman, although he won't be there early, Denard Robinson, Ace Sanders, I mean, what do you think this offense is capable of putting up if everyone stays relatively healthy? Because there's a lot of enthusiasm in North Florida based on, you know, the thought that maybe this team can score some points. Do you agree with that, or are they way off base?
I do. I think they're going to score points. I think Jed Fish is a good offensive coordinator. I think they have some nice pieces in place. I think the offensive line will be solid. And I think Blaine's going to take steps that people don't think he's going to take. I really do. I think he's going to be a better quarterback than what we've seen over the years. And it, not necessarily so much better, but smarter, getting the ball out, not taking as many shots. I just think that this offense will take steps forward. And truth be known, Brian, they probably will need to.
Because the defense on the other side is going to be a work in progress all season.
You can't have a defense that doesn't have great pass rushers in the NFL anymore. And if you do, you got to compensate. And if you compensate, that means you're going to bring pressure. And when you bring pressure, that leaves your cornerbacks on an island, and we know they're young in the back end. So I think that'll add up to a lot of big plays, a lot of points scored against them.
All right. Now, one of the areas that they really tried to shore up yesterday through the waiver wire was on the defensive side of the ball. How about 7 waiver claims yesterday? That is a rarity. In the 20 years that I've covered this league, I don't remember one team on Sunday after cuts claiming 7 players, and they've got 10 new players just from the midway point of training camp.
Yeah, and I don't think they're done either. I mean, you know, we'll play the game on Sunday, and then you'll see some more moves made. It's just the nature of the beast when you're not a good football team. You have to be able to continually turn over the roster. Maybe you find a gem, maybe you don't, but why not keep doing it? If you know what player X has got to in training camp and in the preseason, and you see a guy released and he's Y, and you might be able to go to the next level, why not take a shot on him? So I give Dave Caldwell a lot of credit. I know a lot of people sit there and say, well, there's no continuity. How can you build a team? Look, the bottom end of most NFL rosters are interchangeable. Why not keep trying to find out who can play and who can't, and maybe you'll find a gem in the process.
And when you look at this roster, it's got 26 new players from last season. That's 50% turnover. I remember a couple years ago kind of tracking turnover by teams and record, and it sure seemed to me that the teams at the bottom end of the record scale in the NFL, of the standings, you know, were turning over about 30% of the time. 50%, that's pretty dramatic also.
It's crazy, crazy dramatic. But it also tells you about the football team and what the roster was like. And Dave Caldwell and Gus Bradley, they knew, even Sean Conn knows, Tony Conn knows, they all know. When they got there, they had to have a complete overhaul of the roster, and they have to do it, and it's going to take a lot of patience on the fans' part, but it's also going to take a lot of creativity in terms of trying to win a game now and rather than looking toward the future. Because you can build this thing for the future, but you still want to try and win football games. That's where coaching comes in. That's where your creativity comes in. But more than that, patience is the word for North Florida.
All right, Pete. I know you got to get going because you got to get on your airplane. Thanks for checking in. Will we finally have you back in the studio next week?
You will, indeed. I can't wait.
Because Buscelli wants me to argue with him tonight. You know what? I'm just not sure I'm up to that.
Yeah, well, Buscelli's name is mentioned when I fire away at Keith Olbermann, too. So he's propped up, too.
You never pull
punches. He conveniently left out what he said, by the way.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, we could go on and on about Olbermann, and I have a feeling that next week when you're back in here, Buscelli will want to nail you on that, too.
You got it. All right, man. I'll
Thanks,
see you guys.
Pete. Appreciate it. All right. Welcome back. We are live again. Brian Sexton, Tony Buscelli, Joe Fortunato, Pete Prisco again on the road. Appreciate him grabbing a couple of minutes out there. If you haven't seen Keith Olbermann and his whole retort, you can find it on the web. And he takes Prisco apart piece by piece by piece, which Tony is
not in a fair manner.
No, it's not fair. I mean, he took sound bites and 6-8 second sound bites and didn't set him up very well and just kind of threw him out there. There's all sorts of
it was cheap shot.
It was. It really was. So, but I brought up to Pete, and I'm going to ask you about it now, the Kevin Turner story. You know, the former New England Patriot, Philadelphia Eagle, played at Alabama. Peter King wrote about it in his Monday Morning Quarterback column today. That is a very important issue to deal with, which are these players whose long-term health, and there are many of them, long-term health is at risk.
Listen, go read the Monday Morning Quarterback article of Kevin Turner. Kevin Turner is a guy, like you said, played fullback. It was a good player, tough player, and he talked about how he played through concussions, and he even says, listen, I'm to blame as much as anybody. I wanted to play.
Right.
And now he has ALS. I don't know if ALS was caused because of the concussions. I don't know if any of us know that.
I don't know it.
A lot of people have ALS that, unfortunately, I had a family member die of ALS. It's a terrible disease. It's an awful disease, and I hope they find a cure for it. Because the way what it does to a human being and how it just deteriorates everything about them and they end up passing away, it's awful. And Kevin's in a fight for his life right now, and he was one of the plaintiffs, and he was very happy with the settlement because the way it's structured, it's capped out for people with ALS. They can receive $5 million if it's shown concussions and everything else. I still don't know how they're going to tie that concussions to ALS. Maybe there's more science than we know about. But the whole problem with the concussion lawsuit I had is there's a lot of people that play this game that have concussions. My guess is most people who've ever played the game of football have had a concussion at some point. I mean, some head trauma.
Ever played the game. So we're not just talking about NFL players.
NFL.
College, high school.
And you look at all these players, and the majority of them don't have any long-term issues. Now, there is a pool of players
who have severe issues.
Now, are those directly related to the concussions and CTE? That's what we're still trying to figure out, and we'll learn more as it goes forward. But to lump all these 4,500 players, and I don't know all of their medical, but my guess is they all don't have major issues, and then to go after the NFL because they felt like there was some smoking gun or the NFL was hiding something, I have trouble with that. Now, I think Kevin Turner has a great perspective. He says, I love the game. My son plays the game. I don't want to kill football. He says, in fact, I'm happy what the NFL is doing is trying to make it safer, having better protocols so that when players do have concussions, they come back and they're not allowed to go to play in the game like I was.
And that's the residual effect of the lawsuit.
If that's what this lawsuit caused, if that was the end game of it, then okay. Listen, we want to make the game safer. I still worry we go too far and, you know, we start blaming the NFL for everything. But this is Kevin Turner, your heart goes out to him. I hope he gets the $5 million for his family, for his kids, and they're well taken care of.
I mean, that's
I just
issue.
Don't know.
If it's tied to football.
If it's tied to football. And I think that's what Pete's column was saying. And I think what he was saying is, like, listen, we're jumping to a lot of conclusions. And I think all of us in any sane person, and this is what the thing with Keith Olbermann misses completely, because I know Pete feels this as well. Any player who has issues from the game of football, whether it is concussions or if it is major joint issues, I believe the NFL should take care, and not just the NFL, the Players Association should take care of those players and make sure their medical issues are taken care of. And that's where we need to get this to.
They are, by the way, dispersing the funds in this deal. One of the key elements was that it wasn't the NFL and their doctors and their board that made the decisions, but the money is going to be administered by the Players Association. And my whole thing is, and especially after reading the Turner article, is that football and the greatest institution of football in the United States, the NFL and the world, should do their best to take care of players like Kevin Turner who have severe issues. They should help them.
And I've, in my,
that's a moral issue, by the way.
And I know we're almost up against it. We gotta go to the news.
Make your point.
I think the NFL and the Players Association should take care of medical issues that players have, head especially, other body parts, whatever it is. What I don't like is when players try to use or manipulate the situation for money, so they can put money in their bank accounts and take care of themselves or for whatever. Listen, if you're really hurt, let's take care of the medical issues. I had hip replacements. The NFL had a program. They have a very good program where they would pay for the cost of the surgeries that weren't covered by insurance. That's a good program. They have a lot of programs like that. This is going to be better now. Take care of players who have medical issues deemed responsible from concussions. Take care of them. Make them comfortable. Take care of their families if they can't work. But the guys who have no issues,
right?
You don't deserve the money.
Agreed.
You don't get the money. This isn't a free money grab just because you played in the NFL.
Well, you know,
name me another corporation, another business, that because you worked there, that for the rest of their life, they're supposed to be indebted to you.
Do you know what the Olbermann thing felt like to me? It's kind of like the whole global warming thing. If you don't agree with that perspective of that particular side of the media.
I can go down a long list of issues in the media that if you don't agree with them, you're like some pariah.
And so here comes Prisco, who offers a completely different viewpoint, but one that's worthy of consideration, and he just destroys it as if you are some sort of...
But doesn't even address it, really.
Doesn't really even address it. So, all right, well, Pete can obviously take care of himself, but we thought we'd bring that up for you this evening. When we return, more on the concussion issue. We'll go into the games around the National Football League this weekend. You can join us, 355-NFL1, 800-355-6351, on our broadcast this evening. It is brought to you by Crown Royal Maple. Whiskey started, maple finished. You're listening to Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the Hanania Studio. Jaguars Monday continues right now.
Welcome back, Jaguars Monday. Sexton, Buscelli, Fortunato. Hope you enjoyed Labor Day, if you actually took the day off. There are a lot of people working today, you included.
Yeah, it's funny. I got invited to play golf today. I said, oh, can't. And I got to, you know, ask two different people to play golf and the wife to go to the beach, and I had to remind everyone, there are no holidays in football season.
No, you got to get used to that.
There are no holidays.
Nope.
And especially, you know, do what we do. We're not like the players where they have to practice and everything on holidays. But, you know, we have the radio show and getting ready for the game this weekend. And then, you know, I have other jobs and responsibilities. It's funny. You get into, as soon as training camp starts, you know, I just put blinders on and say until hopefully the Super Bowl. You're not going to be doing anything else, and hopefully it's with this team, but I'll be doing stuff from Westwood One and during the playoffs and everything else. You just go forward and realize that, hey, it's football season.
So you're not going to play golf the entire season?
No, I'll play golf. Don't get me wrong. I just couldn't today. Okay. I mean, I'm actually playing tomorrow. So
there you go.
But my point
you're
is –
you're going to miss that.
But it's a little bit work-related.
I understand.
And but there's this – you know, you put the blinders on, you just kind of go to work, and you don't think about it. And yeah, it doesn't sound real good. I didn't play today because it's holiday, but I'm playing tomorrow.
Play tomorrow when you get to work, yeah.
So let's throw that whole thing out. Don't listen to anything I said. But the mentality is, though.
Joe does that most of the time anyway.
Yeah, I know. He doesn't listen to anything I say. But exactly. The mentality is you just grind away and you go at it, and especially for a player. I remember as a player, there are no holidays. There's no Thanksgiving. There's no Christmas. Yeah, you spend maybe a half a day with your family. There's no New Year's Eve or New Year's Day. I mean, you're hoping that you're busy from the end of July until the first week of February.
What do you suppose today was like for Gus Bradley's football team? First day.
Work day.
Yeah.
First 53 man.
But half the roster has to be, whoa.
No, that's what you show up. The meeting room looks different. You have new faces. There's a lot less faces in there. And for the first time, since this group's been together as far as a coaching staff and even Dave Caldwell and his scouts and these players, you are now focused on one thing and one thing only, and that's the Kansas City Chiefs. You're not worrying about, you know, you're worried about installs for this game, but you're not – I mean, the mindset is so different. I remember as a player, I looked forward to this because training camp was a chore, especially back the old rules how it was. And, you know, you're beating against each other, and there's really no end in sight. And, yeah, you get preseason games, but you're not – those are just like a more of a glorified practice game. And then finally, the cuts are made, and you show up that first day, and you're like, now the season starts. Now we're down to business. Now let's focus on the task at hand, which is beating the Kansas City Chiefs.
All right, so we're going to spend a lot of time in this hour throughout the course of the season talking about what happened the day before. This may be the only week that we get a real chance to look forward as to what's coming this weekend. So let's deal the next 4 minutes with the Jaguars Chiefs, and then we'll look around the league. Good?
Perfect. You're the boss. Driving the car, driving the train, whatever it is.
Yeah, well,
whatever vehicle we're in.
I couldn't push the right button an hour ago to get Loggeman on the air. So,
well, Joe will help us out.
Yeah. All right. So talk to me about what you've seen from the Chiefs. Have you spent any time with their tape
yet?
I thought you did today.
No, okay. I watched tape this week on the Chiefs. Listen, they're a revamped team. They got 30 new faces, new head coach in Andy Reid, new quarterback in Alex Smith. They're hoping he can be what he was in 2011 when he took the 49ers to the NFC title game. New GM. They do have some key guys that were all pro players or Pro Bowl, I should say Pro Bowl players last year back. And so they have some talent, but it's going to be a completely different team than, and they're hoping so. They were 2-14 last year. They're young in a lot of areas, especially the offensive line. They have four basically new starters. Brandon Albert will be the left tackle who's in his contract year. He's a very good player. Obviously, Eric Fisher was the first overall pick taken before Luke Joeckel, the right tackle. The average age of the four starting offensive linemen besides Brandon Albert is 23 and a half years old. Very, very young. First-year starter in the center. Left guard second year. Third year at the right guard. Rookie at the tackle. So it'll be interesting. I think we can take advantage and have some success there. They have Dwayne Bowe on the outside. Obviously, but after that, where are the weapons as far as in the passing game? But then you go to, you know, obviously have Jamaal Charles. They're going to run the ball. He is one of the best backs in the league. Defensively, they're a 3-4. You know, they have DeAndre Poe, who was the first-round pick the year before. Didn't have a great rookie year, but all the reports you read out of Kansas City that he was unblockable in practice and that he had this great preseason. I can't wait. I want to look for myself and watch the tape and see if I agree with that. And then they have two, I know this for a fact, two very good pass rushers. Tom Hawley is one of the best pass rushers in football. He'll be an outside linebacker, but on third down, he's going to put his hand on the ground and get after the quarterback. And then Justin Houston, out of Georgia, I think he's a second year, maybe a third year player.
That's him.
A very good pass rusher, and Derek Johnson in the middle. So they have a good linebacking core, Brandon Flowers at the corner, a good corner, and Eric Berry, one of the best safeties. So they are talented on defense, and it's going to be a huge challenge for the offensive line because of the pass rushing ability they have.
Jaguars have only seen Alex Smith, so we've only seen him once. You know, we saw him in 2009 when the Jaguars went out there and got beat 20-3. That day he was...
No, we saw him back in 2007 or 8 as well, the year we were 12-4, and he was a rookie. Remember, he struggled here?
That's right.
He was awful?
Yeah, that's right. That was at the very end of the year.
Yeah.
But the most recent time that we've seen him, 27-41, 232 yards and two touchdowns. So... You know, I guess my sense is that was 2009, and he was just kind of starting to come into his own, and that was a completely different coach. That was Mike Singletary, and now they've got Harbaugh in San Francisco, and that's where he went up in 2010, 2011, started to get better. How good is he? How does he fit into
Into
Andy Reid's system?
I think it fits well. Andy Reid is a West Coast offense, shorter, more intermediate routes, high-percentage passing game. You know, Alex Smith does not have the big arm, but he's very, very smart, makes good decisions. That's what led them to the NFC title game. He was very efficient, which fits what Andy Reid wants to do to a T. And so I think he'll be a good quarterback in that system. Now, who's he going to throw the ball to? You have Dwayne Bowe. It's obviously very good. But opposite him, you have Donnie Avery. They don't have a lot of depth at the wide receiver position. And so you wonder where he's going to distribute the football. But I think it was a good signing for what Andy Reid wants to do and the type of quarterback that has success in that West Coast system.
I'd forgotten his rookie season here. 8 of 24 for 123 yards in a driving rainstorm in December.
That's shocking. I remembered a game I wasn't even covering.
Yeah,
better
and I'd
than
forgotten,
you.
I'd forgotten that he was the quarterback
that's unlike
that day.
You.
Yeah, don't tell Loggeman. But I remember the day because it was 10-9 and it was a driving rainstorm. It was not a pretty game whatsoever. Jason Kraft had a kickoff return for a touchdown in that game.
That was the 12-4 worst 12-4 team, if you remember correctly.
Yeah, I remember it. I do. I remember that team because at the end of the year they should have been 12-4. They finished 11-5.
11-5. I'm sorry.
Because they sat everybody in Houston.
Houston, that's right.
And that was the day that they gave up a couple kickoff returns for touchdowns.
Right.
And yeah, I remember that team. All right, and then they went to New England, and got beat. Byron came back with the ankle. So,
see,
the memory's coming back.
There you go.
Just a fog here at the end of the week. Or the beginning of the week. It's a fog. Yeah, I'm trying.
You're struggling.
No, I'm not. We're coming out for a break. When we come back, we'll look around the National Football League. You're listening to Jaguars Monday on Jaguars Radio. All right, fans, nobody helps you get ready for game day better than Gate. Snacks, food, drinks, and more. Stop by Gate today. I've composed myself. Forgetting that Alex Smith thing. Just rattle me the core.
Yeah, it should.
Made me feel old. Let's talk about games around the National Football League, and we'll start with the Thursday night opener, Denver and Baltimore. Both teams are I don't want to say reeling. The folks in Denver are reeling more than anyone else because of, you know, the suspension of Von Miller and the injuries they've had. I mean, they're having to kind of work their way through something, and the Ravens are a different team in the sense that, you know, a couple of their key players have moved on. And so they're, you know, Ray Lewis is retired. Danelle Ellerbe is in Miami on the defensive side of the ball. And on the offensive side of the ball, Dennis Pitta goes down. I mean, they're playing without some guys.
No, they are. But I get the feeling, and I'm probably in the minority here, that Baltimore's going to be better than anyone thinks. Because I'm a big Joe Flacco fan. I think Joe Flacco is an outstanding quarterback. And I think the guys they lost last year, you know, the key guys you talk about, the Ray Lewis, the Reed. Pitta's the biggest one because of the injury, but the other guys that went on to either retirement or other teams, I don't think they were playing at a – I mean, Ray Lewis was an emotion leader, but it wasn't
he was
a premium middle linebacker, and Ed Reed was at the end of his career. It wasn't outstanding. I think Baltimore's going to be good, and I think Denver's going to be good. That's why I think it's going to be an outstanding game. And Denver is reeling because of Von Miller, but he'll be back and, you know, for the stretch run when it matters most, I think they'll be just fine, but Baltimore is a team that just intrigues me. I think they're very well coached. I think they have a big-time quarterback. They got Ray Rice.
I was just about to say, we haven't even mentioned Rice.
Very
we're 2 minutes into this conversation.
And so it's going to be I think they're going to have a good year.
Patriots at the Bills. The Bills don't even know who their quarterback is yet.
That might be – that'll be over probably middle second quarter.
You know, it always seems like one of the two games
Isn't Tool playing?
Jeff Tool.
Tool is the star. Isn't he the
undrafted
starter?
Rookie,
yeah, that's going to go well.
Well, unless E.J. Manuel is ready to practice on Wednesday.
No way.
Well, they're leaving that one up doubt. How about here's an old AFC Central matchup. The Titans at the Steelers.
I think Mr. Mark Trestman, the head coach of the Chicago Bears, is in for a rude awakening opening day because I think Cincinnati is one of the best teams in the AFC, one of the most talented. I think their defense is outstanding. Geno Atkins just got a big-time new contract, the defensive tackle.
5 years, $55 million.
Outside, after J.J. Watt, the best defensive tackle in football. He is unbelievably good. Chicago, it'll be interesting, but lost a lot on defense. You know, obviously they have Jay Cutler. Brandon Marshall's coming off with a hip injury. He says he's ready to play. Their offensive line's been shaky forever. They do have Forte. It's at home, so it'll be a tough opening day for Cincinnati, but I think Cincinnati is very good. I think that AFC North, you got Cincinnati and Baltimore, I think they're the two best teams. That's why I think Pittsburgh's going to have an average of down year because they got two of the best teams in the AFC in their own division.
All right, so Titans and Steelers then.
I think Steelers are better than the Titans.
Okay. Because of the quarterback.
I'm not so, yeah. I mean, Jake Locker is the quarterback. I'm not sold on the Tennessee Titans at all.
At all?
At all.
Offensive line with Chance Warmack and Levitre and Chris Johnson. You don't think they can at least come out and do what they've done?
I am not a Chris Johnson fan. I think
there's a lot of reasons not to like him. He's incredibly inconsistent.
I think if you breathe really hard,
right,
he tends to go down.
Okay. Here's one I'd like to see. Falcons at Saints. Talk about opening up, bringing Sean Payton back against the team that won the division last year, against the team that many people think is the best in the NFC?
I think Atlanta will win the division, but I think New Orleans wins this game. I think the emotion in that building with Sean Payton coming back, Drew Brees, I don't think they're very good defensively. I think it's a shootout. You'll see teams, them both going up and down the field. But I just get, you know, I think Sean Payton coming back home. I like the Saints in that game, but Atlanta is still going to be the best team in the AFC, in the NFC South. But I think they lose opening day.
Can the Saints stop them?
No.
You know, defense is.
I don't think.
You don't think the Falcons' defense is either.
I don't love the Falcons' defense. I mean, where are you going to get a pass rush against Drew Brees? Are you going to hold up outside with all those young corners?
All right. Seahawks come all the way across the country to take on the Panthers. We get a look at Russell Wilson on this coast.
Tough, tough, tough opening day for Seattle, flying that far. But I guess if you're going to do it the opening weekend where you get, you know, you're not beat up, you're not tired, you haven't just come off the road, you have obviously plenty of time. I guess is they'll get out there early, get, you know, acclimated and adjusted. But you're going to be in Carolina. Last time I checked, Seattle is not the most hot, humid place to train or live. Coming into the to the south, it's going to be steamy hot. Cam Newton, I love him. I know Jeff isn't sold on him, but I don't, who's he going to throw the ball to? There's so many questions there. That defense is – they got a nice pass rush in Charles Johnson, and I know like the other guy Pete likes, I can't think of his name, the other defensive end, the South Carolina kid, is a good player as well. But I like Seattle. I think Seattle's – I think they're –
well, they proved last year they could go on the road, come east and win.
Yeah, I think Seattle will win that game.
How about the Dolphins? Are you sold on them? They open at Cleveland. I mean, you would think they're a better team than the Cleveland Browns.
I think Cleveland's pretty talented, but, you know, they got two young quarterbacks. Who's going to play better, Whedon or Tannehill? That's – I mean, that could really come down to that. I mean, Miami's added a lot. They spent a lot of money. I don't like the Mike Wall signing because I don't think he's a number one receiver.
Right.
I think he's a stretch-the-field guy. He has great speed, but I don't think he's refined as a number one guy. Tannehill, you know, how's the improvement from year one to year two? They have questions in the backfield. Is it going to be Lamar Miller? Is it going to – you know, is he? Can he take over? Can he be the every down back? Defensively, I like that defensive line. They are good. Cameron Wake. They got the two big guys, Starks and Solei, in the middle. Very tough there. They added the linebacker position. They got some more depth there. So secondary is a question, but I don't think Whedon can expose them. That's a coin flip. I can see it going either way.
Here's another one with some talented players on the offensive side, the Vikings at the Lions. We see Adrian Peterson with his return. And obviously, you know, what Calvin Johnson and Matt Stafford are capable of doing is putting up a lot of points.
I think Peterson will rush for about 185. The problem is they got Christian Ponder at quarterback. You know, you lose Percy Harvin. Percy Harvin was such a big part of that dynamic, you know, adding that kind of threat outside. He is, you know, in Seattle but won't play because of the hip. They add Greg Jennings. Greg Jennings 5 years ago would have been a great signing. I don't know how much he has left in the tank.
And he was injured most of last season.
And that defense is getting older. Kevin Williams, you know, not the same player he once was. Jared Allen, how much does he have left in the tank? You know, I'm not sold on the Vikings, but I don't know how good Detroit is either. You know, I'll give it to Detroit just because they're at home.
All right, moving right along here, looking at week one of the National Football League, the Raiders at the Colts. There's not a whole lot to
Colts, say. Colts.
The afternoon games, there's two really good games, one in the afternoon, one in the evening, the Packers at San Francisco early on last year. In fact, that was opening day last year. It was the Niners at the Packers, and the Niners announced they were ready for primetime by beating the Packers on opening day at Lambeau last year.
I think Aaron Rodgers will have something. It's a little bit of a homecoming for him. He's a Northern Cal kid, went to University of California.
And of course, they played in the playoffs at Candlestick Park, too.
Absolutely. And so, and I think Dom Capers has a score to settle with Colin Kaepernick and what they did to him and embarrassing him in his defense in the playoffs. So I think that's maybe one of the premier games of the weekend. It is. And, you know, you look at that San Francisco team, Justin Smith was such a big part of the defensive tackle. And when he got hurt last year, they weren't the same defense. Teams moved the ball against them. Is he back all the way healthy? He's another year old. He's obviously healthy, but he's another year older. Can he be that dominant force in the middle? You got Patrick Willis, best maybe middle linebacker in the game right now. That's a great game. It's going to be a lot of fun to watch. I worry about the Packers' offensive line being able to hold up.
Well, remember, for those of you who are, Malaga's gone. Right, so they've had to shuffle guys around, and they took a kid from Mississippi State in the first round last year, and he ain't ready to go yet.
And I think San Francisco wins that game. I think they're a little bit more physical, but I think it's going to be very close.
The Cardinals at St. Louis, that still sounds funny to me.
I love St. Louis.
Okay. It's my hometown. I do too.
I love the team.
You do the Rams. Yeah.
That defense is so good. I think they get all over Arizona. I think it's a tough opening game for Bruce Arians, new head coach.
All right. Giants at the Cowboys is Sunday Night Football. That's fun just from the rivalry perspective.
I hope the Giants hang 50 on them.
There are a lot of people that think the Cowboys are going to be really good this year. Really good.
I'm not one of them.
Okay. Two Monday night games has become the tradition on Monday Night Football opening week. Eagles at the Redskins is the marquee as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, Houston-San Diego is the second one. Houston's going to lay a big number on San Diego. I don't think San Diego's very good. It pains me to say that because their defensive coordinator is John Pagano, who I played for his dad, and we went to the same high school. And their linebacker coach was my roommate in college, Joe Barry. So I'm rooting hard for the Chargers, but I don't think it's going to go well.
But you got Mike Vick and Chip Kelly's offense.
I think RG3, Mike Vick.
And then all the history of that
series. What a fun
series.
Game. The problem is Philadelphia can't play defense at all. Look for the Redskins to win that one.
All right, way to carry it for 2 hours, Baselli.
Hey, easy stuff.
No problem. And for Joe Fortunato, I say have a great night, and we will talk to you on Jaguars Radio Thursday with the Gus Bradley Show starting at 6 o'clock. Have a great night, everybody.